You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalit, whatever you like. Or you can always ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Head on over to RockAuto.com and let them know that Locked On sent you. And today, of course, we have part three of the Ultimate Division crossover. Talked about the Vikings yesterday, so if you missed that, go check it out. Today we are talking about the Bears and the dreaded Nick who shall not be named. But also a lot about that quarterback controversy over there, and if there ever is an option for the Bears or a path to them being good. So we'll, of course, talk about that in a bit. But first, I want to talk a little bit about football culture in Texas. It's pretty infamous. You're probably familiar with how seriously high school football is taken in Texas. It is a religion, you know, it is like the basis of towns, and it is so deeply ingrained in Texan culture. New Boston, Texas is not a great town. It's a small town in, you know, kind of rural Texas, and it's not a particularly affluent place. And in New Boston, there is this almost like militarism to football. It's discipline, it's loyalty, it gives you a sense of purpose. And so somebody who was kind of forged in that environment, like Jeff Gladney, coming out the way he did, isn't particularly surprising. It all definitely adds up when you kind of look into the character of the place where he came from. He started out in high school as like a dynamically athletic wide receiver, somebody who could really run all over all the old the little slow high school kids. And his offensive coordinator eventually turned into a head coach. He got promoted and basically said, "You are an insane athlete. You should play two ways." And it turned out he was even better at cornerback. But because of a lack of experience at cornerback and that kind of uncertainty for how to use him, he wasn't particularly highly recruited by a lot of schools. He mostly got offers from like SMU and North Texas and these places that don't really give you a chance to have like an NFL career. But he ends up trying to go to this one-day football camp at TCU, and he absolutely floors them and puts himself right on their radar and ends up getting an offer. And, you know, when you are verbally committing to colleges, it's a handshake, right? Anybody can back out at any time. And during Jeff Gladney's senior year, he shreds his knee, tears his ACL, really bad injury, and he has to stay on the bench for the rest of his senior year and what ends up being his redshirt year at TCU. They do end up sticking by him, but he doesn't get a chance to play because he's recovering. So when he comes back out as a sophomore, or I guess you'd call it redshirt freshman, but when he comes back out, that's when he starts to display the country tough. That's how his coaches kind of describe him, as country tough, because he's from, you know, way out in the boonies. And there's like a whole bunch of anecdotes for that, of him just displaying this unbelievable toughness. One of my favorites is, down there at Texas Christian in training camp in the blistering summer heat, there was this practice where TCU was running out of DBs to do the drills, be it injury or cramps or whatever. Kids were dropping like flies, and at a certain point, Jeff Gladney just took over and ran with the ones, the twos, and the threes in like 115 degree heat. This is his coach telling him, telling this story. And Jeff Gladney says he did it just so we could get through practice. In his senior year, there was a fight against Iowa State receiver Joe Skates. He ended up getting ejected from that game, and it was kind of one of the only moments where he actually garnered headlines. You know, as a corner, he was actually pretty invisible and kind of, you know, in the very good way. But he's a feisty, fiery guy, and they actually asked Mike Zimmer about that after they drafted him, and he says, "Yeah, he's one of those guys that doesn't want to back down." Like, this, it's so very the kind of thing that Zimmer absolutely loves. You know, Zimmer's like broken up fights at camp, but he always will come back out of the media and be like, "Yeah, they've got passion. What do you want?" And he loves that kind of thing. There is also an injury history that is a big part of Jeff Gladney's college career at TCU, and something that was kind of a talking point for him coming out. He had to play through an ankle injury. He played through, of course, he played through coming off of that big knee injury. And then his senior year, he tore his meniscus. Now, a meniscus tear is the kind of injury, it's the kneecap tendon. And that's the kind of injury that you actually can play through if you, you know, take a little Toradol and you can get out there, you can tough it out. It's very painful, but it's not like an ACL where you're like, you just won't have the same athleticism. You can tough it out. It's just a matter of managing pain. And so for Jeff Gladney, that's not a problem. He actually plays out the entire season, and he waits, trains for the entire combine, runs the combine on a torn meniscus, and then after all the workouts are done and it is confirmed that he's not going to have a pro day because of COVID, he then finally gets the surgery to repair it. So for Gladney, the way that I see him after looking at, you know, through all these anecdotes and, you know, and the fights and the heat and the injury history and playing through all of it, there is, I mean, there's tough and then there's completely insane. And Jeff Gladney to me reads as a guy that is just completely insane, but it's the right kind of crazy. I talk about this with cornerbacks all the time. It's that dog mentality. And he talks a lot about, he likes to, you know, be a little bit of a trash talker. He likes to get in the heads of receivers. He actually grew up going toe-to-toe with Denzel Mims a lot in high school. They were they went to programs that actually played each other. So he got to know and cover Denzel Mims a lot, and then he goes to TCU, Denzel Mims goes to Baylor. That's a big rivalry, so they actually play each other all the time. So Gladney and Denzel Mims actually end up kind of spurring on this rivalry. There was kind of a hot moment in the draft there where the Vikings had taken Gladney and Denzel Mims was on the board at the end of day one, and it kind of looked like the Packers might have gone and done it if they had the chance, especially when they were on the clock and they, you know, might have gone. Then when they actually traded up to get Jordan Love, it kind of looked like things could end up that way, and it didn't. Mims went to the Jets, but the reason I bring that up is because Denzel Mims has like 4 or 5 inches, I think, on Jeff Gladney, maybe even 6. And they have this very physical rivalry where they're up in each other's faces and they're pushing and they're shoving and they get their hands on each other. And even though Jeff Gladney is at a huge size disadvantage, he really holds his own and actually kind of gets the better of Mims quite a bit in that matchup. It's that chihuahua mentality, that little dog mentality. That's kind of why I call it the dog mentality, because it's, you know, I'm going to be the alpha in the room no matter what. I don't care if I'm the tiniest dog in a room full of big, giant Great Danes. I am going to take charge of this situation. That is the vibe that I get, at least, from Jeff Gladney. And we'll see, of course, if all of that translates onto the field or if he takes a more head down, just learn how to be in the NFL approach. But coming from the tutelage of Gary Patterson, who is, not only does he run a similar scheme to Mike Zimmer, it's a lot of match zone, it's very complex, it requires a lot of the same skills, but he is like tough as nails. He is an old school, yell at ya, you know, wear you down, drill sergeant type coach, a lot in the same way that Mike Zimmer is, where Jeff Gladney says, yeah, no, I get that he like yells at me, but you just focus on the message and not the delivery, and it'll be fine. And he's like, absolutely seems like the kind of guy that is going to mesh very well with Mike Zimmer, who, I mean, let's be honest, a rookie defensive back, Mike Zimmer's going to be all over the guy. So that's kind of why I called this episode what I called it, right? Jeff Gladney is the exact right type of crazy. He is the kind of unstable, scrappy warrior that is exactly what I want in a defensive back. So before I go on to the next story and then eventually the ultimate crossover, I want to talk to you really quick about Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a website where you can get all of the parts your car or truck could ever feasibly need. You just enter in your make, model, and year, and then you can browse through all the parts that you could possibly fathom your car would need, from batteries to fluids, whether you are like a black thumb that has picked up a new hobby here in quarantine, or if you are somebody that just needs to quick pick up a part and you got a friend that'll install it and that's cheaper than going to a mechanic, rockauto.com can help you out. So head on over to rockauto.com and see if you can't save a little money getting that part versus what you would maybe get at like an AutoZone or an O'Reilly, which is brick and mortar. And usually if you take your broken car over to there, they can kind of charge you whatever they want because you're not exactly going to drive all the way over town in a car that needs maintenance. So that's rockauto.com. And when you check out, I would just love it if you told them that Locked On sent you. To understand the story of linebacker DeMarcus Gates, first, I kind of have to remind you about the Ole Miss Hugh Freeze recruiting push. And DeMarcus Gates was the class of 2014, so he was a little bit after the Laramie Tunsil, Laquan Treadwell, big one that kind of culminated in a lot of the controversy that ended up at Ole Miss. But basically, Hugh Freeze showed up to a floundering Ole Miss program, started paying players under the table to come to their school instead of going to Alabama or Ohio State or any of the really big, like, you know, blue chip premier programs in an effort to try to revive Ole Miss. Eventually, years later, all this comes out. A lot of stuff gets rescinded. A lot of people get in trouble. And DeMarcus Gates was, and I don't know if he, like, took any money or anything. I don't know if he got wrapped up in any of that. But he was part of that big Hugh Freeze recruiting push. So at the time, forgetting the scandal that eventually embroiled it, at the time, it was part of this really hyped up moment at Ole Miss of, oh my goodness, you know, we just got DeMarcus, he was a big recruit at the time, we just got DeMarcus Gates to come in and play linebacker, and he is just one of more of this, you know, this renaissance for the Ole Miss program. And in his freshman year, the old player that had the starting job that he couldn't take it from, his name was Denzel Kamdiche, who kind of helped mentor him and take him along. So he doesn't play much outside of some special teams in his freshman year. In the second year, with about four games left in the season, Denzel Kamdiche gets hurt. And so it's time for DeMarcus Gates to have that moment that you've been called up. And it's finally, like, your opportunity to shine. And a lot of careers are you know, made or broken on these moments. Guy in front of you is hurt, you have to go in ready or not, and if you play well, you can cement a spot for yourself. I mean, we just talked about this yesterday, or it was Monday, with Cameron Dantzler. And perhaps there is no greater example of somebody absolutely crushing this opportunity than DeMarcus Gates. He racks up like 14 tackles, he gets a turnover, he gets SEC Defensive Player of the Week, and from there, he never looks back. So after that season, Denzel Kamdiche never comes back to the field. That ends up being his last year at Ole Miss. The other linebacker on the team ends up graduating as well. And DeMarcus Gates ends up being the most tenured linebacker on the team. He ends up actually having to kind of run things as the, like, veteran leader, even though he's only got four games of experience. And so that kind of fight or flight, that now you have to, ready or not, you have to be a leader, ends up kind of defining the character that NFL teams see. And I mean, he was not a dynamic enough player to garner any NFL interest outside of this, but he has a, you know, really good character, and he's got a good work ethic, and he's pretty productive, and that's enough to get him a chance after college with the Cleveland Browns. But if you remember, the Cleveland Browns were going through some pretty rough kicker problems. Zane Gonzalez had a really bad rookie year, and they were kind of trying to give him some competition, and they needed to make a little bit of room, and so they waived DeMarcus Gates. And that's the only NFL opportunity he would get in his entire NFL career. He didn't even make it to training camp. He was waived on June 14th. And by the way, that kicker didn't even win the job. So DeMarcus Gates is robbed of that opportunity, and he ends up pretty much, for a lot of players, that's it, right? That's now you have to go find a real job, you go use your degree or whatever, and move on, and football was a fun chapter. But in 2018, something called the Alliance of American Football was kicking up, or I guess in 2019. After the 2018 season, the Alliance of American Football kicked up, and they end up signing DeMarcus Gates, the Memphis Express, to come in and play linebacker. And there, surrounded with not really NFL competition, he absolutely explodes. He has a wonderful season for the eight games that the AAF is a thing, but unexpectedly, it folds, and he no longer has a home. But he had played well enough in the AAF to earn a chance with Washington. However, again, in June, before the start of the 2019 camp, Washington brings in a guy named Ashton Lampkin, an undrafted, never made it onto a team cornerback, to go join an already crowded room, and they again waive DeMarcus Gates and only leave themselves with a few linebackers. So it is a very disappointing move for DeMarcus Gates. So again, he doesn't even get to camp. He's never actually competed in an NFL training camp. But at the end of the 2019 season, another tertiary football league pops up, the XFL, and the Houston Roughnecks decide to draft him in the defensive front seven portion of the draft. DeMarcus Gates ends up starting and ends up thriving in the XFL, again, surrounded by non-NFL talent, but proving that he maybe doesn't belong with that level of competition and belongs with something a little bit more prestigious. So he plays well enough to really earn another name for himself and turn some more NFL heads just in time before COVID hits and the XFL folds. So DeMarcus Gates' career has been one of opportunism. I think his story is really defined by opportunity. Give him the opportunity, like what happened at Ole Miss when Denzel Kimdiche went down, and he takes advantage of it. Give him the opportunity in the AAF or the XFL, and he takes advantage of it. And the failures in his career have been, I mean, part of it have been his tape, you know, and problems in coverage. And if he were a better player at Ole Miss, we wouldn't really be talking about being in and out of the NFL and into tertiary football leagues at all. But whatever opportunities are given to DeMarcus Gates, he has been able to make the most of them. But NFL training camp is a different beast and shows a higher degree of difficulty. All these teams went through OTAs and mini camps and stuff with DeMarcus Gates. Cleveland and Washington both did, and decided to waive him after that in favor of something else. So it'll be curious to see what happens to DeMarcus Gates. The linebacker group is a little open, like I talked about yesterday with Jordan Fair. It is open at the bottom rung here. You have guys like Gedeon and Eric Wilson at the kind of backup rotational spots. They are by no means unassailable. You have guys like Troy Dye and Cameron Smith as these youngins, also by no means unassailable. If DeMarcus Gates can play well, there will be a spot on this roster for him somewhere. But he's got to make it to camp first. He's already made it further than he's ever made it, though. He never made it to even July, so we've at least gotten that far. But now I'm going to switch gears and talk to Lauren Cox about the Bears, as well as with Matt Derry and Peter Bukowski of all the other Locked On NFC North shows. So stick around. That is coming right up.
Welcome back into day three of this Locked On Podcast Network NFC North crossover. I am, of course, Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears, joined by Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers, Lucas Braun from Locked On Vikings, and Matt Derry from Locked On Lions. And it's our turn to go through this Chicago Bears offseason a little bit. And if you don't know what's been going on with the Bears this offseason, you have been living under a rock. Even with everything else going on in the world today, there's been no shortage of Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky discussion around Chicago and really around the NFL national talking points. It is an open quarterback competition, one that will be interesting if and when teams can start practicing and what preseason games are going to look like, because for now it's still Trubisky as the starter. But Foles is fully expected to take over at some point. Feels like more of a matter of when rather than if. But they're trying to build up a little bit more so around them to support the quarterback position, try and put a little bit less pressure on them, revamp the tight end position. Gone is Trey Burton. Likely soon to be gone is former second-round pick Adam Shaheen. And in is new second-round pick Cole Kmet and the former Green Bay Packer Jimmy Graham. They also made some additions defensively with Robert Quinn coming in the pass rush and a couple of different changes in the secondary. But I want to start with Jimmy Graham because on my podcast we've talked with Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers about that a little bit. But I wanted to circle back to that with sort of this new role, because before it was going to be the Jimmy Graham show. Now Cole Kmet is in there as a potential compliment at this tight end spot. Peter, do you think Jimmy Graham's decline in terms of age can be slowed down by sort of alternating this role with having another tight end there in terms of maybe having him play fewer snaps? Or when you look at what he did in Green Bay coming to what he can do in Chicago, is it just purely that he has lost that step and doesn't matter how much he's going to play, he's just not going to be that same guy on fewer snaps?
I have a follow-up question. Have the Bears perfected the procedure that scientists did to Wolverine in the comic books? Because if yes, then they can deal with the physical decline. If not, I think they're going to have some trouble. No, in all seriousness, Jimmy Graham only played 57%, tick under 58% of snaps last year for the Packers, despite the fact that he was healthy most of the year. They managed his snaps. I mean, Mercedes Lewis played 45%. They made sure that Big Bob Tonyan was getting reps. They made sure that Jay Sternberger and even something called an Evan Bayless was getting reps as well. And that is because they didn't think that Jimmy Graham physically could do everything that they needed him to do. Now, part of that is because his blocking is not very good. And part of that is because at his age, with the amount of miles that he has on his legs, you want him out there on third down. You want him out there in the red zone and giving him the best opportunity for him to succeed based on what he still has left. To me, the Bears signing Jimmy Graham was the most head-scratching move of the offseason. The Packers thought he had something left that the Seahawks knew he didn't. And now the Bears are signing him, believing he has something left that two teams have decided he doesn't. And I don't know what scenario he could be in that would make him a useful player at this point. And I hate to be that blunt about it because I think he's a really good guy. I think he is one of the best tight ends of his generation. But unfortunately for these players, in a lot of these cases, just physically, when it's over for them, it's over. And I'm sorry, but it's over, Jimmy Graham.
And I'm really interested to see how this plays out because I come from the same perspective you do, Peter, from having watched him in Green Bay and Seattle and feeling like, yeah, I don't think the Bears have much to get there. But then Matt Nagy has done nothing but rave about Jimmy Graham, and it feels like this was sort of like their big...
Who are you going to believe? Ryan Pace or your lion eyes, all right?
Yeah, but it's like they have this vision of like Jimmy Graham being excellent this season and being this missing piece. And like he was the guy that they really seemed like they wanted to get to fix this Bears offense. And we'll see. That's going to kind of be, I mean, it's sort of the same discussion with Nick Foles, where again, it's like a little bit of a head scratcher with the other quarterbacks that were available this offseason. But the Bears feel like he knows the system and he's a winner and he's been a Super Bowl MVP and, you know, ignored the three seasons in between his good seasons where he had some real struggles. But you know, they feel like he can be that difference maker. And I know one person in this chat knows a lot about Nick Foles' successful years, Lucas Braun from Locked On Vikings. I know it's a sore subject, but I guess why for Bears fans who are skeptical about Nick Foles, why are you so afraid of him?
Oh, so it's just a confluence of many different black magics, like the Vikings in Soldier Field black magic, the curse of like Nick Foles and what he did to the Vikings in the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago. We still think about it all the time, wake up in cold sweats. And I think what happened in that game and the strength that you can like rely on Nick Foles for is that he is an executor of a plan. And the reason he's kind of a career backup is that he doesn't add anything beyond that. He doesn't add like Kirk Cousins is an executor of a plan. He, you know, like a game manager, even if you will. But he does so with a ton of accuracy and a good arm and like a lot of skills that like make it so that you can kind of leverage that to really good offense.
Those are
for
important.
Nick Foles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for Nick Foles, it's that he can't, like, he will not freelance or do any or make too many dumb decisions, but he will make some bad throws and that'll hurt you. And that's kind of why it's as poorly as Mitch Trubisky has played. That's why it's still a discussion that, like, can he even beat Mitch Trubisky? So for the Vikings, it's just he probably just like has our number. And there are a lot of players still in the building that were in that 2017 NFC Championship game. If they have to go up against Nick Foles again, it's absolutely going to be in their heads.
Yeah, we've seen just how important the quarterback play is in this division. And I noticed when it comes to these Detroit Lions, Matt Deary, that those seem to be the one team last season and in recent seasons that Mitch Trubisky's been able to, for whatever reason, put it all together against those Lions defenses. And I think it speaks to some of what we talked about earlier this week with the discussions about Darius Slay and Davante Adams and how teams seem to know what the Lions are doing defensively. So much man coverage coming from that Patriots system. And that seems to be where Mitch Trubisky can be successful because there's not a lot of deception. And if it can be simplified for him and he knows what's coming and knows where he can put the ball, that's been like the one area he's been able to be successful. So is there any indication that things might change in that regard for the Lions or that they may have added enough talent to be a little bit less predictable and a little bit more consistent, even if they are a little bit predictable?
I don't know. I mean, I think the Lions like that, you know, rush three, drop eight routine and the man coverage stuff is not going to change look, they fired Paul Pasqualoni, the defensive coordinator, and hired Corey Unlin, who is was a secondary coach in Philadelphia. But I still think this is Patricia's defense. Now, if you just watch the tape of Trubisky against the Lions, it's right up there with Joe Montana, Tom Brady. I mean, this is like stuff you show your kids, you know, and your grandkids. Like, watch number 12 against this team in white and silver. I mean, it's crazy. So you would hope that this season that the Lions would find a way to get to the passer, whomever it's going to be. But they just did not do that in those two games against the Bears, and Trubisky ate them alive. But as far as changing the philosophy of the defense, to kind of go to your question, Lauren, I don't see it. I think the Lions are going to stay with what they know. I think this is the Patricia way. It's the Patriot way. They feel like they've got better players now. Outside of Darius Slay leaving, I still have questions about the secondary. I do think a guy like Tracy Walker on the back end is going to be a budding star at safety. Jamie Collins is an upgrade. We'll see about the pass rush. Getting Deshaun Hand healthy will help them. But as far as changing a philosophy, they've burned those Bears tapes, but I don't think all of a sudden, just because Trubisky lit them up twice, that they're going to be sending 6, 7, 8 guys at them this year.
So I like to imagine Mitch Trubisky bouncing his grandkids on his knee saying, "One time I did a great thing against the Detroit Lions."
It was the Lions and the Buccaneers a couple seasons ago when he threw 5 touchdowns and everybody thought he was going to be the Hall of Famer, you know, after that game. But clearly some
like 30% of his QBR was derived from that one game that year.
Yeah, and that's ultimately where we're left with this Bears team, and I feel bad because, you know, like the huge addition was Robert Quinn to pair him with Khalil Mack, and, you know, they've got a competition at cornerback, they've got a new starting safety next to Eddie Jackson, they've got kind of running it back with a lot of their front seven and offensive line players. There's some other storylines on this team, but yet it still feels like most of that doesn't matter if they can't get either of these quarterbacks to be productive. And I guess that's kind of where I wanted to leave it open-ended here is, and it's funny because like Lucas has his Nick Foles experiences and now Matt has his Mitch Trubisky experiences. So then Peter, do you think it makes much of a difference whether it's Nick Foles or Mitch Trubisky? Do you feel like there can be an elevated level of play from one of those two quarterbacks, or where's your confidence level in this Bears offense?
Well, I mean, I think certainly I would be less confident in Mitch Trubisky, but the problem for the Bears is I wouldn't have very much confidence in Nick Foles playing 16 games. So the problem there is how can I have confidence in Nick Foles if I'm not sure Nick Foles is going to play? If the season starts and Nick Foles is the starter and he plays 16 games, yeah, they're a much scarier offense to me with Nick Foles than Mitch Trubisky, for all of the reasons that we can name, but not the least of which is because the offense, at least 2 years ago, was decent to right below average. I think by DVOA, it was still like 25th or something. But Allen Robinson is really good. And I still like Anthony Miller. And I still think Matt Nagy is a good coach, although I think he's going to be the Chiefs offensive coordinator next year. It's just the kind of thing that I think that Nick Foles is unreliable in a different kind of way than Mitch Trubisky. I mean, I think 10 games of one and 6 games of another is the most likely outcome here.
Yeah, it's a very uncertain future in Chicago with not only the quarterback position, but then if quarterback doesn't pan out the way they should, then all of a sudden, is it uncertain at head coach like you hinted at there, and maybe uncertain at general manager? And I feel like some of those uneasiness feelings are also being felt.
You hate to see it, Lauren.
You really do. But some of those uneasy feelings are also being felt in Detroit. And on tomorrow's crossover podcast, we're going to hear all about Matt Deary's Lions and what we can expect from Matt Stafford and Matt Patricia next season.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow for the final edition of the Ultimate Division crossover. We're finally going to get around to talking to the Lions. Also, a couple more stories for you. So, look forward to all that. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.